Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Welcome to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640 and live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. If you're new to my show, the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show is all about life and human behavior. I happen to have a PhD in clinical psychology. My areas of interest, though, are evolutionary psychology and human attachment, human mating strategy. But I care about how we relate to each other. I care about our mental health, and I care about our physical health. There is news this week, which was particularly fascinating to me. And before I tell you the news, I will tell you that in the past, I have driven elementary and high school principals a little crazy. And I'll tell you why. So I happen to have a family that needs a lot of sleep. You know, sleep is partly genetically determined. And there's some research, for instance, to show that different ethnicities, different races have different requirements of sleep. Again, looking at evolutionary psychology, it's all about what's in our evolutionary past, right? And for instance, there's some research to say that many African Americans require less sleep than us old thin-skinned white folk, apparently. And so I happen to, and interesting, my kids are biracial, African American and me, but they got the white gene on that one, if that's true. Because I, growing up, always needed my full 9 hours. And even today, when I get 7 to 8, the odd day of the week, I find myself able to have 9 hours sleep. And I feel like a new person the next day. I really need it. And you know, sleep is so important. It is the new status symbol because we're all trying to have better digital wellness. Yeah, getting off our screens, staying on one time zone, making ourselves have sleep. But the reason why I drove high school principals and elementary school principals crazy is because I would continue to pull the research on sleep deprivation and its impact on academic achievement. You know, they've even done studies on high schoolers and college students cramming for an exam. And they have one group who are told to, you know, pull an all-nighter or stay up as late as you need to, but make sure you get everything read over and over and over. Learn it, learn it, learn it. And the other group are told to read through material one time and go to sleep for 8 solid hours. Who do you think does better on the exam? The sleepers. I tell my students that all the time. Don't cram sleep. Just, you know, learn it as the semester goes on. Read it over once before you go to sleep. Get a good night's sleep without alcohol. And then read it over once in the morning and go in and take the exam. They've also looked at chronic sleep deprivation. Now, you do know that teenagers stay up late at night. And you do know that your teenagers sleep till noon on the weekends. This is natural and it's normal because there's a delayed release of melatonin in the adolescent brain. So they tend to be night owls and they tend to also need their sleep. So, you know, babies and toddlers need the most amount of sleep. Older children might start to require less sleep. But then teenagers, for a little chunk of time, suddenly need a whole lot of sleep again. And that's around the time high schools, certainly in California where I live, have started way too early in the morning. So they have done studies that just looked at what time the first class starts and connected it with academic achievement and found that if you just start a little later and let those teenagers get a little more sleep, they do better on the exams. So I am applauding this week the governor of California who signed into law a new law. Now the schools take 3 years to comply, to get up to speed. Yeah, they can have up to 3 years to comply. And they cannot start classes any earlier than 8 a.m. Now, my kids have gone to school where classes started at 7:25, but you can get there at 6:30 for some special classes, right? That period zero or whatever they call it. If you're trying to get extra grades or you have a study time or meet with a tutor or whatever, whatever. Now, I also live in a city, Los Angeles, with very long commute times. My kids sometimes went to charter schools where it's not necessarily in your neighborhood, so you got a big drive. And we had to do carpool, meaning we had to pick up two or three other kids. So there were years where we had to be in our car and moving before 6:30 in the morning. Oh, we also get told that a child not only needs a good night's sleep, they also need a good hearty breakfast, right? Yeah, right. You're pulling through drive-through McDonald's at that hours. If you can find a Starbucks open, amazing. But what parent is up cooking bacon and eggs at, you know, 6 in the morning or 5:30 in the morning? They're getting ready for their own workday. There are many students who get on buses that are bused into schools around Los Angeles, and they get on those buses by 5:30 and 6 in the morning to get to this special school. And they're so tired. They live with chronic fatigue. Chronic fatigue suppresses your immune system, makes you more susceptible to illness. Chronic fatigue obviously affects your cognitive ability and your ability to learn and study. Chronic fatigue can also cause you to gain weight. Mm-hmm. It releases an appetite hormone, an appetite-inducing hormone, and it suppresses an appetite-suppressing hormone. So messing with your circadian rhythms is also associated with weight gain. I just had this thought. I wonder if this law only applies to elementary and high schools. I think it does, because I want you to know, I also teach 7:30 a.m. college classes. And plenty of times, I watch my students literally fall asleep in class. It's not because I'm not exciting. Stop it. How dare you think that? In fact, the opposite happens. As I see those eyes start to blink as they go up and down, those eyelids, and they're fighting it, I do something really dramatic. I start dancing, or I get louder. I don't know. I change the lecture and say something really interesting. I talk about sex. As soon as you talk about sex, they sit up and take notice, right? But I do see it. And it happens that these kids need more sleep. I've also done surveys with my class. I did one this week on a class of health psychologists, no less, who have already had my lecture on sleep requirements, knowing that they need 7 to 8 hours sleep a night. Less than half the class had gotten at least 7 to 8 hours sleep, and fully a quarter of the class had less than 5 hours sleep the night before that class. If you're going like that, you're going to increase your accident and injury rate. Car accident rates go up. You get sicker because your immune system. And oh, did I mention how much it can hurt your relationships? There's been research to show that just sleep deprivation, chronic sleep deprivation, causes more conflict in relationships. So I will close this segment by saying one thing. Get some more sleep. And that means if you need 8 hours sleep, get into bed an hour before you need to go to sleep. Get off those screens. Make sure your room is cool and dark and quiet. Don't eat too close to sleep. Don't have caffeine after 2 p.m. Don't drink alcohol if you want a good night's sleep. Alcohol puts you to sleep, but then it brings you up again. All right? Let's all get a good night's sleep. And I applaud the governor of California. He's going to raise our state's grade point average just by giving our kids an extra half an hour or hour's sleep in the morning. I think it's really important. All right, when we come back, are you intimidated by people? Are you an intimidating person? It may be physically, intellectually, socially. Maybe you're just drop dead gorgeous and people are intimidated by you. I'm going to talk about the intimidation factor when we come back. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640 and live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. We'll be back after this.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me.
Welcome back to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640 and live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Maybe you have one of those cars, those newfangled cars that doesn't have AM radio. That's okay. You, wherever you listen to KFI, it's cool with me. All you do is download the free iHeartRadio app, and then you can listen wherever you are in the world. If you'd like to follow me on social media everywhere, it's at Dr. Wendy Walsh, at Dr. Wendy Walsh. And I do want to make one little bit of housekeeping announcement if you are a regular listener. You know I've been training for months for this breast cancer three-day walk, the Susan G. Coleman breast cancer three-day. And I am now collecting sponsorships. I think I'm going to raise the amount of my goal because I was thinking that I would raise about $3,000, but I put it on my Facebook and my Instagram. and in 2 days raised $2,800. Uh-huh, exactly. So here's what you need to do is you just type in Google, Susan G. Komen, S-U-S-A-N, middle initial G, Komen, K-O-M-E-N, and my name, Wendy Walsh, and it will take you right to my fundraising page. That's all you do. I think I just checked it. I'm at 100% of my goal. I got to figure out how to change it to 5,000. This went way too fast. I'm at $3,000 and $3,003 already. So I'm going to change it to 5,000, and please help me out. Just Google the words Susan G. Komen and Wendy Walsh, W-A-L-S-H. And hey, I'm going to walk 60 miles, 20 miles a day for 3 days, starting November 14th. I know, I'm terrified. All right, back to the business. I want to talk about the intimidation factor. Whether you're somebody who accidentally intimidates people, or maybe you do it on purpose, or whether you get intimidated easily. Let's talk about what it is. First of all, I was intimidated recently, and I will tell you why and how. I was in a Starbucks, and there was a guy that scared me. He was older. When I say older, I'm saying probably early 40s. He was big and burly. He was wearing combat fatigues. He had a shaved head. He had some funky tattoos, some piercings, and he had a computer open, and he was clearly spending the day working at the Starbucks. He had his food around him, his bag open beside him. This was his office. But the thing that got me, he kind of had, I don't know, intimidating body language. He'd get up and do something kind of erratically, go to the trash, come back. And he had a sort of angry walk to him. But the real thing that intimidated me was he had a huge sticker on his computer that was open that said, "I am a terrorist hunter." I was like, ooh, what is he doing online? Oh my gosh, I'm frightened. I mean, that's its own form of terrorism, being on the other side, right? So I was pretty quick to get my coffee and hightail it out of there because he just felt like a scary guy to me. Now, you should know that being big and scary is really easy to explain from our evolutionary perspective. People bigger than us obviously posed an obvious threat back in our hunter-gatherer past. We were feuding tribes. We feuded over everything. We feuded over mates. We fought over territory. We're still doing it. Have you seen the news lately? What's going on in Syria? Okay, so it's basic anthropological stuff. But sometimes there are people who are naturally big who are teddy bears, and they accidentally intimidate people. And if you are that person, you know what that feels like. I mean, there's some good parts to it, right? Like if you are 6'5" and 250 pounds, you can move through life so comfortably. You can feel so safe. You can get jobs as a bouncer, a boxer. You can be an athlete. There are lots of things you can do with that size. On the other hand, you can also intimidate women. There's an article that I read recently from Psychology Today called The Intimidation Factor. And in the article written by Jennifer Latson, she describes a guy exactly like that, 6'5", 250 pounds. And he was hiking in the woods, deep in the woods one time, and found two young women. One had hurt her ankle. And he was a trained first aid person, paramedic or what have you, and even had equipment to help. But he knew that his size would scare them, being alone in the forest. And he could see the fear in their faces when he offered to help. They said, no, we're waiting for a helicopter. So he knew there was no helicopter on his way. He knew that sticking around would make them uncomfortable. So he just hiked on, found a ranger, sent the ranger back to help them. That's the double-edged sword of being a big guy. There's one other bad thing about being the big guy. You get hit more often. Sad to say, but your size alone sometimes persuades potential troublemakers to, you know, provoke a little bit of violence. Take a swing at them, especially if they've been drinking, right? Besides size, what are other things that make humans intimidating? Sometimes it's just a bigger-than-life personality. I think I might have that. That's why talk radio is the perfect thing for me. But in a party, people might be like, who's that loud woman doing all the talking? Maybe it's intellect. Maybe you're smarter than everybody. Maybe you're more wealthy. Maybe you've just got a higher social status. Maybe you're just hot, hot, hot. And we're all intimidated when you walk in a room. There's another piece too. Sometimes people are intimidating because they remind us of somebody who spooked us in the past. Somebody from our childhood. Somebody who caused some trauma somewhere. And they can trigger a fight or flight response in us. Here's the thing you should know. When somebody triggers even a low-level fight or flight response in you, they are a perceived threat. Your body releases cortisol and other stress hormones. So you live in a state of constant stress that can suppress your immune system, that can increase inflammation and cause long-term problems. I have a bit of advice for you big people. Don't crouch, because that makes you maybe look less imposing, but maybe kind of unfriendly or looming over them or something. But some people that are really tall just widen their stance a bit, and it gives them, makes them look an inch or two shorter, right? Also, we have to remember that we accidentally intimidate some people and it causes fear in them. And so it's okay to work extra harder, to be kinder, nicer, or to back off. It's okay. I would say that the antidote to every kind of form of intimidation is self-esteem. If we can start to love ourselves more and not be threatened by people if they're smarter, more beautiful, richer, higher social status. You know, they even did a study once of cars at an intersection who are real slow to take off when the green light came. And they found that people got on their horns, the people behind them, if they had an old dumpy car or a cheap car, but not so much if they had an expensive car. It's like people were intimidated by the social status. That's so crazy. Here's where I think your best self-esteem can come from. Knowing that you are resilient, that you have overcome challenges in your life, and you've done it by being strong, by being courageous, by having dignity, and being comfortable that you have a moral compass that guides you separate from the rest of the crowd. Here's a big fat secret. Not one person is better than you. We're all human. Nobody gets out of this world without pain, without stress, without trauma. But once you've developed your own self-esteem, you will feel less easily intimidated. And you will feel less vulnerable, and you will also be less menacing, because there's one other thing. Often people with low self-esteem act intimidating because they feel less than. I know. Crazy. Often it's because they had their own childhood trauma. They act angry and defensive because of early life child abuse, where they feel at all times like they could be attacked on some deep unconscious level. So they build this like totally tough, brazen personality to just protect themselves, right? You can let go of that. Absolutely. You know, sometimes people are intimidating because they're introverts and they're actually scared, and their silence or their staring sends people intimidating signals. And so the way around that is to learn to, just as hard as it is, just to use your cheek muscles, learn to smile, learn to change your body language, even if you feel scared. Introverts sometimes come across as emotionally distant, but really they're feeling afraid. And I think we all need to have a little more compassion for each other, right? And we need to understand that we're all people. Everybody's afraid. Nobody's getting out of here alive. Nobody's getting out of here without pain. We should have more compassion for our fellow human beings. When we come back, we're going to give you a special surprise episode of our podcast, Mating Matters. Mating Matters, the podcast that looks at all human behavior through a lens of evolutionary psychology and human mating strategy. The episode you're about to hear when we come back is called Sexy Money. Stay with us. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. And live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Doctor, doctor, can't you see I'm hurt?
Welcome back to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640 and live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Now I'd like to bring you a special episode of my podcast, Mating Matters. You know, you can listen to Mating Matters anywhere, any place, wherever you get your podcasts. You simply search Mating Matters. For now, let's take a sneak peek at an episode called Sexy Money. Why do men make money? I know, we think it's so they can have a comfortable living. I think it's so they can have access to women. Sexy money. The price of sex. This is Dr. Wendy Walsh, and you're listening to Mating Matters. Welcome to Mating Matters. I'm Dr. Wendy Walsh. In this episode, Sexy Money, you'll learn how the pursuit of money is really a pursuit.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Of sexual partners for men, and that when women make a lot of money, it can hurt their reproductive opportunities. Unless they live in a matriarchal society and have what's called a walking marriage. But even in a patriarchal society, the price of sex goes up and down depending on cultural supply. And today, we're in a high supply sexual economy. This is Sexy Money. Money, 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 a song released by the uber-famous Swedish pop group ABBA in 1976, basically sums up the dilemma of so many females working hard under a patriarchal system, but never seeming to get ahead. The dream of a Cinderella fantasy. It permeates our culture. A financial rescue. Whether it's Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman, or Lady Gaga in A Star is Born, or the many, many actresses who have tried on a glass slipper in all the remakes of Cinderella, female mating strategy seems to involve one of two choices. Toil away and hope for true love, or get a big-time rescue by an alpha male. Of course, in the fairy tale fantasy, it's always both true love and a financial windfall. Here's Julia Roberts as a lovable small-town girl turned prostitute in the movie Pretty Woman, and Richard Gere negotiating the price of her company for 6 days. Spoiler alert, it turns out to be a lifetime of company when they fall in love, or so audiences are led to believe.
If you're talking 24 hours a day, it's going to cost you.
Oh, yes, of course. All right, here we go. Give me a ballpark figure. How much?
6 full nights, days to 4,000.
6 nights at 300 is 1,800.
You want days too?
2,000.
3,000.
Done.
Movies aside, in real life, does sex have a price? I mean, we all know that some women charge for sex as professionals. But what about the sex that happens in relationships? I know, it seems kind of immoral to think that love has a price tag, or that women actually sell dating sex. But anthropologists and evolutionary psychologists believe that unconsciously, there's a market value of reproduction. Whether one is paying for dates or displaying large, wasteful resources like fancy cars and houses, or buying absolutely wasteful gifts like diamonds, sex has a price. Women realize that there's a cost to reproduction. Let's start with the risks associated with pregnancy, or labor and delivery. You know, until the advent of modern medicine, many women died in childbirth. And, oh yeah, There's the cost of feeding and sheltering a child until they grow up. Thus, whether men know it or not, sex has a price. It may be monetary, or it may be the very high price of care and commitment. But love is costly. Here's why. Human males generally want sex more than human females because the cost of sex is so high for women, especially if they choose the wrong sexual partner. For women, the clear risks are threefold. One, because of a female's unique biology, women are more likely than men to contract a sexually transmitted disease. Two, because most women's bodies produce high amounts of the bonding hormone oxytocin during female orgasm, women are more likely to fall in love through sex. Hint, ladies, men don't fall in love through sex. They fall in love through trust. And three, as I mentioned, women are far more likely to contract an 18-year case of parenthood. For men, the cost of choosing the wrong sexual partner is one lousy night that he can forget about quickly.
I can't go to a big Ivy League school, and I can't run a company or be mayor. That's just the way the world is for a girl. I need you. And right now, you are a big, fat, piss-soaked zero.
That was Amy Adams playing Lynn Cheney in the movie Vice. That was a woman's angst in the early 1960s. Historically, women had to be choosy. Picking the wrong dude to mate with could result in poverty and starving children. That's why, if he wasted resources on her, she could be assured of his commitment and his ability to provide more resources if he ran out. Now, think about this in behavioral economics terms. Remember your Economics 101 class? When something declines in supply, the price goes up. When something rises in supply, the price goes down. If women want less sex than men and are choosy with who they mate with, they keep the supply low, and the price of sex is high. Back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, the price of sex was about 6 months of courtship, where a man had to sacrifice a lot and compete with other men to win a woman's favor, and then pay big time at an altar with a wedding. But in recent decades, sociologists have begun to notice a trend. The price of sex is going down. They suggest this is because of two factors. One, the physical risks of sex are reducing, and two, female competition for mates is increasing. How did sex get less risky for women? Well, let's start with modern medicine that made childbirth less dangerous. And then, in 1962, there was the introduction of the birth control pill.
This is my husband, Mark. We're going to have 3 beautiful children and live happily ever after in Paris. Someday, but for now, I'm on the pill.
Besides medical advances, another great thing happened in the 1970s and 80s. Women entered the workforce in droves and finally had their own money as a buffer against poverty. With that insurance policy in place in the 1970s and 80s, women began to enjoy the pleasure of their own bodies and have sex because it felt good and it was fun, and they worried less that motherhood would throw them into poverty. Thus, sex began to rise in supply, and the price began to drop. Remember the price of sex that used to be 6 months of courtship and a wedding back in the 1950s? Well, by the 1980s, the price of sex had dropped to the cost of 3 expensive dates. It was an unspoken rule. It was called the 3-date rule.
I've been married for 33 years, and the last time I dated was 33 years ago.
That would have been 1986, when the price of sex was still 3 long evenings.
There were a few times when I would go out with a girl, and the first time, yeah, there would be nothing would happen. The second time, you'd try to do something, maybe you'd, like in the movies, you'd lean back and kind of yawn and put your arms out and put your arm around her. And then the third date, if you did that, she snuggled up with you, you would know, oh, this is going somewhere.
I've known my husband for 25 years. We have been together for 19 and we've been married for 9. The 3-date rule is, you know, you never wanted to have sex on a first date. I mean, that was my own thing too. I never wanted to have sex with anybody on a first date because I wanted to, one, see what kind of person they were. And you couldn't really tell that always from a first date. So the second date was, for me, used to kind of, you know, figure out even more who the person was. Like, how did they react to the when I called back? Did they call me back right away? Did they give me that attention that I was looking for? And then by the third date, you know, I think I felt I knew people well enough where if I wanted to have sex on the third date, I would have been very comfortable doing so.
You know, 3 dates is kind of like the expectation that you've spent enough time with this person, you've gotten to know them, and now you want to see them naked. I think it was an expectation on both of our parts because we're both there. We're both into each other. We're both at that third date kind of goal, I guess you could say. And we're like, okay, this is the time to move on.
And I mentioned more competition from women. Here's the other problem for women. When all the women lower their price for sex and enter a mating marketplace that includes competition from online pornography and an endless stream of beauties on dating apps, the cost of sex drops to the bargain basement price of one well-worded text. Here are the words that this young man in his 20s puts in a text in order to woo a woman.
Come over. But maybe I would, you know, add something beforehand. Like, hey, what's going on? What you doing today? You free tonight? Like, yo, come over. I want to hang out. Or she usually knows what the deal is. I'll say, come over. And she'll say, yeah. And it'll be an implied, like, you know, booty call.
I'm 30 years old, single, living in Los Angeles with a dog and a pretty well-paying job and a ton of friends. Courtship has been a little non-existent or has gotten more few and far between, I think, with the men kind of in the dating scene, especially in LA. And it's really kind of been boiled down to maybe a dinner, maybe a movie. And if you're not willing to have sex at that point, then it's kind of on to the next. I don't think I've had a guy call me and ask for a date in probably 6 or 7 years. A lot of it is through social media now, whether that's Snapchat or Instagram. Well, they'll just write you a message through your social media channel and compliment you and ask if you want to meet up that night.
And women are apparently on call for cheap sex at almost any hour. When asked what is the latest time the young man we interviewed would text a woman for sex, keeping with the times, he's kind of shameless.
Because, you know, like going out drinking and stuff. Bar closes like 2, so maybe like 2:30.
Compare that to the 1980s, when dating was expensive for men.
In the 80s, you still felt like, as a man or as a young man, that it was up to you to be the provider, in quotes. And when somebody else gave you the money, it just sort of, it almost took away the power that you had, I think. Because if you paid, then you kind of felt like she owed you.
But looking at the new sexual economy using an old lens may sound like sage advice. However, it might not work if the female-to-female competition is high, if your friends are putting out, and your boyfriend is exposed to an endless array of filtered beauties on Instagram, and many, many virtual sex partners on porn sites. This is who your new competition is, and the old advice may not work anymore.
I think that's maddening for them not to connect that because they had sex on a first date, that this is why a guy doesn't want to commit. I hear this from lots of friends, especially when I was younger, who would be like, I can't get this guy to call me back. It's like, well, you had sex with him on the first date. What do you expect? He doesn't need to call you back. He already got what he wanted. And when he wants it again, that's when he'll give you a call because you're waiting for him to call. They think they're trying to get a relationship, but they're doing all the wrong things.
My name is Mark Rigneris. I'm the professor of sociology at the University of Texas at Austin, and I'm the author of Cheap Sex, The Transformation of Men, Marriage, and Monogamy. We're talking about the price of sex here, right? So when the price of sex diminishes via a form of technology, and so the book talks about the birth control pill, pornography, online dating, all three kinds of technologies. When those diminish the price of sex, men are more able to sort of command kind of the price that they want, right?
I mean, men can kind of get by with a happy hour budget for a couple of cocktails, really. Maybe a dinner. You know, I'm newly dating someone, and even just getting him to take me out to a movie has been a challenge.
I mean, we're speaking about very economic terms, right? You can slather on top of that all sorts of romance and wooing, etc. But when it comes right down to it, men have not changed fundamentally for a very, very long time. What has changed, and fairly recently, is sort of the ease with which they can access what we call high-quality sexual experiences.
You can attract a woman through Tinder. You can attract a woman through just four or five photos of yourself. You don't really need to have all of the glitz and glam. It's just, you know, are you relatively good looking? Are you bangable?
And when men can access high quality sexual experiences, Dr. Mark Regnerus says they lose the ability to commit. After all, men don't have a fertility window. The advantage in the race to procreate now lies with men.
It really pushes women in a corner of like, they're the ones who have to compete with each other for his attention, right? Even though his quality, sort of objectively speaking, may be notably lower than in the generation before them. And I think it's arguable that, you know, men have not improved lately, and that this sort of lowering of the cost of sex has not only not improved men, it's turned them more boorish. And at the same time, maddeningly, it gives them control over the pace of the relationship.
No, I definitely feel a pressure to have sex early on because of that fertility window. You know, I'm 30 years old and haven't had a child at this point in my life. And I feel that if I don't present myself in a way sexually that's desirable early on, then they'll get bored, they'll move on and find somebody else.
Hi, this is Dr. Wendy Walsh. You've been listening to my podcast, Mating Matters. The episode is called Sexy Money. We've got more for you when we come back after this. This is KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Oh, help me, please, doctor. I'm damaged.
Welcome back to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640 and live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Now I'm going to bring you the second half of the episode, Sexy Money, from my podcast, Mating Matters. Enjoy. Anthropologists have long known that when women are economically disadvantaged, marriage rates go up, more children are born into wedlock, virginity is coveted, and oh yeah, prostitution rates go way up too. That's because when women are economically disadvantaged, they're forced to negotiate with their most valuable asset, their vagina. So they either maintain their virginity and ask a man to sign on the dotted line and agree to support them and any offspring in a contract called marriage. Or they rent it by the hour. Here's another scene from Pretty Woman, where Julia Roberts plays that lovable prostitute and her colleague, played by Laura Sangiacomo, discuss the power they feel when negotiating for sex.
It's looking really slow tonight.
Yeah, well, maybe we should get a pimp, you know. Carlos really digs you.
And then he'll run our lives and take our money.
No, you're right. We say who, we say when, we say how much.
But in a high-supply sexual economy, according to Regnerus, women have lost their bargaining chip.
So when you
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Think about technology. She gets control over fertility with the advent and the uptake of contraception. So she gets the control over how many children she has and when. He gets control in exchange for how quickly is sex introduced into this relationship.
And the latest research shows that the dream of fertility control with the birth control pill is also starting to crumble.
In this morning's Health Watch, birth control pills and blood clots. The hormones in oral contraceptives are what make them work, but over the years, side effects have become a big concern. Now, as Dr. Jennifer Ashton reports, one particular type of the pill may be linked to some new problems problems that can be deadly.
Technology certainly adds to the problems for women. Pornography and online dating have made finding a suitable mate tricky.
And then you introduce sort of high technology digital porn, which is like, wow, now I can have a almost sexual partner right in the same room with me. I can be in one relationship in reality. I can be in virtual relationships in the sort of unreality at the same time. She wants his monogamous attentions. He's like, you have my monogamous real life behavior with a real human being. She's like, no, that's not good enough. He's like, well, that's what you're going to have to settle for. The advent of pornography and its increasing digitalization and quality sort of really provides competition for her.
And all this competition means dating becomes expensive for women, even when the prize is an immature boy who fails to man up.
You know, I get my nails done every other week, so that's about $80 there. Hair is about $400 every 6 weeks.
Budget, probably a good $200-$300 a month.
My dating budget between yoga classes and shopping and, you know, upwards of $1,000.
As for single men, the one we interviewed says he spends not more than $30 to $60 a month on dating, and that's the odd movie, if he has to take a date out.
To be honest, it's usually not like that. It's usually just like, come over. Maybe I'll have drinks at the house if that's what they ask for. If they request, like, yo, you got anything to drink? I would love to have a drink when I come over. Like, okay, I'll go buy a drink. I don't want to sound like a perv or like a mean dude, but that's usually just how it goes.
So is there a way to game the new system? Here's an idea. What if women had total economic power and men needed us for support? We're certainly seeing a culture of young men who seem to be failing to launch.
When we think about online dating as another technology, I mean, who would have ever thought of people sending pictures of their genitalia, men sending pictures of their genitalia to women and thinking this is somehow attractive?
In fact, some sociologists say that when men don't have to work for sex, they lose career ambition. Could women pick up the slack? Research shows that there are a couple problems with the sugar mommy ideal. The first is that when men make less money than their wives, they're more likely to cheat. In the movie Crazy Rich Asians, a rare Hollywood take on a matriarchal family system, the wealthy and beautiful heiress Astrid, played by Gemma Chan, hides most of her luxury purchases, including expensive jewelry, so her husband, who has far less money, can still feel manly. But it doesn't work. She discovers he's having an affair anyway.
Don't try and turn this on me. I'm not the one who screwed up.
Of course not.
You're always the prettiest, richest, most perfect girl in the room. Well, I'm just this lucky bastard who will never measure up.
The second problem for the sugar mommy ideal is that women tend not to choose men who make less money than them. Researcher Fiona Moore from the University of Abertay-Dundee is a sociologist and coined a term called the George Clooney effect.
Hi, guys.
Her study showed that the more education and money a woman has, the more she wants her man to be even older, wiser, and richer, like George Clooney. I mean, we all want to date George Clooney, don't we? This, of course, has angered many men, many good men, who might be considered to be lower status mates. You could suggest that this trend has given rise to a group of violent men who call themselves involuntarily celibate, or incels.
In 2014, Roger murdered six people in a killing spree near the campus of UC Santa Barbara. Before the attack, Roger recorded a video saying he wanted to punish women for rejecting him.
But what would happen if all the men could make the same amount of money? Who would women choose? Well, a study like this would be kind of impossible to stage in a human society. Monkeys can be researched. A group of researchers from Germany, Barbara Titti and Michael Heisterman, the UK, Brandon Wheeler, and Nigeria, Martin Fahey, set out to study resource-based mating systems. That means a mating system where the males defend and protect the resources needed for mating. In other primates, that might mean nesting sites and food. In Homo sapiens, that's us, that means money. Men protect their money from women. The researchers used a primate cousin of ours, wild capuchin monkeys, You know them as the famous organ grinder monkeys. The study's monkeys were living in the wild in Inguaza National Park in Argentina. The researchers had a question. What if lower-ranking males had equal ability to procure and share food with females? Would females prefer a different kind of guy than the standard alpha male? Put in human terms, what if a nice guy trash collector earned the same amount of money as, say, a professional athlete? The researchers manipulated the environment of one community of capuchin monkeys. They limited the access by alpha males to some resources and increased the ability of lower-ranking males to procure food and nesting sites. Think bank accounts and nice houses, ladies. What the researchers found is that even though all the males became equally rich, the females still preferred the alpha males to have sex with. Let's think about this. Certainly, this could be because this preference for alpha dudes is hardwired in female DNA, at least in capuchin monkeys, and it may take many generations to evolve out of women. In other words, since capuchin females showed a super strong preference for yummy alpha males in their anthropological past, and even just before the study was mounted, they may lack something that evolutionary psychologists call behavioral plasticity. Changes in ingrained behavior take time, often many generations. But the researchers think there's another thing at play here, too. Another study on this same group of monkeys found that alpha males are the most socially integrated. They are the big man on campus. And when women hang out with them, besides food, they get community-wide protection from predators. In other words, don't mess with the CEO's wife. Keep her safe, and it'll help you rise up the ranks. Of course, human beings are different. We have a wide range of mating strategies. Plenty of guys are able to obtain sex and long-term mates by just being a good person, offering care and commitment.
A date is not an exchange of goods. It's an exchange of communication. It's an exchange of experience between you and another person. It's not something that you're trying to say, I think you're worth a $100 lobster dinner. It's, I think you're cute. I think you're cool. Let's go out and talk and see if there's anything more to this. That's how I've always felt myself as far as dating is supposed to actually be.
So if making all men rich doesn't fix the sexual economy, what about making all women rich? Think about it. If women owned the resources, men would have to be nice so they could survive and have sex. And women wouldn't need to hope for a wedding and an altar for their survival. It's called a matriarchal society. And yep, there are a few on the planet today. For instance, the Mosuo, who live near the border of Tibet. These people live in large family households. Children take the mother's name, and they always remain in their mother's care. Property is passed down between females. These women have something called walking marriages. Women choose their partners by literally walking into a dude's home when they want to have sex. In the Ngovisi people of New Guinea, if a couple just hangs out enough and the man helps the woman in her garden, for all intents and purposes, they're considered married. All this makes me think, is modern Western culture becoming more matriarchal? If women can't get men to commit his time and resources to his offspring, then the village needs to change the rules.
You know, and I'm someone who is relatively open-minded when it comes to traditional versus non-traditional. I mean, traditional is safe, but non-traditional works fine too. But I think all in all, you know, that's just kind of the way that society is moving, where women can adopt, and should they choose to have a family, they can do it on their own. And because they're financially more stable, a man isn't really needed. And thank God for sex toys.
You know, more than 40% of American children are born out of wedlock. That's been going on for a few decades. And one in four children are being raised by a single mother. If she is to survive, she needs help from the village. Look no further than our current women's rights initiative. The fight for women's reproductive rights, equal pay, subsidized childcare, and even the Me Too movement. They're all designed to reduce the financial burden of motherhood. And while you may think that men fear this kind of female power, equal pay, free childcare, and complete control over their reproductive rights, think again. Could you imagine a world where sex was plentiful and low cost for men
and they never had to work? I think some men might like this. Walking marriage, anyone? I've got a garden I need some help with. Of course, there's another solution. Men could learn to slow down the pace of the sexual relationship in order to get the benefits of a whole relationship. Remember the man who was last dating during the 1980s when the three-date rule was the social norm? Well, now he's a father of sons in their 20s.
In today's hookup culture, I think young men are missing out on the opportunity to get to know somebody and get to know the quirks that really make life fun. And that's one thing I try to tell my boys. It's like, you need to spend time to make a foundation. So I think you're missing out on building a foundation when you're just looking at a woman as just a vessel for sex.
We've been so socialized today to expect, like, oh, now what do I have to do? I have to, if I'm a woman, like, I have to nurture his ego. I have to please him somehow. I have to give back for the investment that he's doing in this nascent beginning relationship. I don't think she has to do any of those things. He should be the one who's doing the wooing, right? So it's not so much that she needs to change. She needs to sort of live into what she has long wanted, which is to be treated well and with respect and dignity and security. And if she expects that from him, some men will give it. Not all men, but some men, right? And she'll more quickly go through the process of figuring out which men those are, because they're still out there.
I just feel like when you're on that app for the sole purpose of sex, that's all you're ever going to get out of life. You're not going to get any kind of love. You're not going to get any kind of companionship. You're not going to get any kind of, like, the little things that make having a relationship actually worth it beyond the sex. Sex is fun, but that's like 10% of your relationship.
A relationship life plan? I'd like to say that I do, but I really don't. I really don't. I mean, sure, I have relationship ideals, but at the end of the day, I've kind of let go of any expectations because I feel like it's safer to let go of those expectations than it is to kind of be clawing at something that may or may not happen.
We have to kind of reacquire this sort of idea of a cartel among women. We hang together or we all hang separately, right? It's power in numbers where we can sort of demand better treatment from men.
Human beings have survived because we are amazing problem solvers. And we are constantly solving the problems presented to us by our environment. Now, in our ancient past, those problems could have included a drought that led to a famine. In today's times, the problem presented to many, many women is that we are in a high-supply sexual economy. And there is an oversupply of successful women and an undersupply of what many would consider to be marriageable men. How are women solving these problems? They're doing it all kinds of ways. They're becoming single mothers, and we know that more than 40% of American babies for the last few decades have been born out of wedlock. They're doing it in same-sex relationships. They may be adopting babies. They may be freezing their eggs to expand their fertility window a little bit longer. But some women are solving the problem simply by raising the price of sex with them. That means they're charging the highest price possible for sex, and that is care and commitment. And men will pressure to obtain sex. They'll say, well, if I don't get it from you, I'll get it from somebody else. I would venture to say that a woman's response every single time should be, I don't think you can get sex with me from somebody else. When a guy leaves because he's not willing to do the work of building an emotional connection with you, then you should count your lucky stars. Because the process of finding one good partner is really a process about eliminating hundreds of them. Love is as much about strategy as luck.
Money, 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 I want some.
I want some money.
Money, money, money. Thanks for listening to Mating Matters. Up next, survival of the gayest. Is gay an identity or a behavior? How do we evolve to have gay people? I'm Dr. Wendy Walsh. Mating Matters is co-produced with iHeartMedia. It is produced, researched, and written by me, Dr. Wendy Walsh, and it is edited and produced by Brooke Peterson. You can follow us on social media at Dr. Wendy Walsh. Please share this podcast with a friend. It's the only way that people find out about podcasts, so please tell somebody about it if you liked what you heard. And don't forget to write a review. It makes a big difference, and it's really good karma. Oh, money, 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 money. Hi, it's Dr. Wendy Walsh. Thank you so much for listening to my show on KFI AM 640 and live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. I'm live every Sunday from 4 to 6 on KFI AM 640 and everywhere on that iHeartRadio app. Also, don't forget to subscribe to Mating Matters. It's a podcast. We put a lot of work into it. We'll see you next time. I'm Dr. Wendy Walsh.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.